This is fun! The FU Network! Hello, Stephen.
Hello, Stephen.
All right, I don't think we have to give our who we are anymore because people have been listening now for a couple of weeks. And
they either know or they don't care.
Yeah, and if they don't care, they're not listening. So why would
they don't know
to
what
them?
They're missing if they're not
yes,
listening?
That's right. Stephen is a lawyer and a political satirist and political commentator and historian. I've done a whole bunch of things in my life, and I continue to do them. Usually all at the same time, within an hour.
Well, that's giving yourself short shrift. I mean, you're the founder of the newish FU Network, which is single-handedly bringing back the fun and relevance to political and maybe a little bit of music and some entertainment. So
all that stuff's coming later. Yeah, music and entertainment and geekery and everything else is kind of health, mental health. It's all coming later, but. Yeah, I'm proud of the FU Network because we didn't plan to be this big this fast. So it's a good problem to have. But unfortunately, a key member of our team got very, very sick. And so the work that he was doing, I'm now doing. And the work I was doing, I'm now doing or still doing. And so, but it's all in a good cause, trying to return, at least with FU politics, we're returning discourse, political discourse to the people. It's political discourse, the way people think, the way people talk, the way you'll hear people talk to each other. No jargon, no, you know, $25 words, no barriers to understanding. People talking about politics who are informed, but have a sense of humor and camaraderie, even when they disagree. Imagine that.
Hard to believe.
Yeah, and that's certainly been missing south of the border, and more and more here. More and more here, our media.
Yeah, it's creeping its way north.
Yeah, it was creeping. Now it seems to be leaping. The way that the media has been behaving, and this segs us into the topic we're going to start with, which is the fact that CBC posted the dialogue of that Justin Trudeau was having with world leaders at the NATO summit. I guess it was an after party or something, and wherein he and Boris Johnson and some others were basically just blowing off steam about the fact that Trump showed up, you know, made everybody else wait while he held a 40-minute press conference talking about nothing. You know, the man was remarkably inconsiderate to his peers, but that's nothing new. He has no respect for his NATO allies. He'd rather be sitting with Vladimir Putin giving him a nice oil massage. and so, you know, people, there was apparently, I hear different stories. I don't know if maybe you can fill us in, but I'd heard that there was a microphone, like the room was being mic'd by Russians. And that's
no,
where
I saw that too,
from.
And it turns out that that's not true. There was an interview with the CBC producer who actually captured it, and it was at Buckingham Palace, and it was a video and audio feed that was actually in the next room, and it was sanctioned, it was set up, and it was the communal feed because Buckingham Palace only allows one photographer. One camera to go in, so they don't allow a scrum. And anyway, so they basically have a pool camera, and this was the pool video camera and audio, and it was shooting through a door, and everyone knew. Well, I don't know if everyone was aware that it was there, but it wasn't a secret that it was there because it was fully sanctioned by NATO and Buckingham Palace, and they were shooting the party through the double doors that were open. Which is why it was set up where it was. You know, the palace said you can set up here and you can peek inside the door. So they, you know, and it just basically ran for the length of the party until I guess they closed the doors. And the CBC producer who actually broke the story and broke down the audio said that all they did was they just sort of, it was running as part of the feed and they needed a clip for a story that they were doing. So he said, well, let's just go through the video feed and see if there's like a good shot of Trudeau, like Trudeau walks through the door and all the rest. We can get like a, you know, a 2-second clip of him moving around in there, you know, with a canapé and a drink in his hand. And so they, you know, he went through, you know, hours of video apparently. and then said, oh, here's the perfect one. Here's Trudeau talking in a little group. He's actually facing the door that's open, facing the camera, and he's framed by these other people. There was somebody in the way originally, and the person moved out of the way. And they said, okay, well, this is great. He's talking to Macron, and he's talking to, I think, Princess Anne was there, Boris Johnson was there, and one other national leader was there as well.
President of Luxembourg or something like that.
Yeah, they're just having they're just having an animated
Norway.
Chat.
Yeah.
They wanted basically to have some B-reel footage of just them having a chat at a cocktail party at an otherwise dull NATO session. And as he looked at it, he said, well, the audio is picking something up because there's a directional camera, there's a directional mic with the camera. But again, the mic is in the other room as well. And the way he described it, he says, it turned out to be just perfect because Trudeau was the one facing out the door, basically towards the camera, towards the mic. He says, if you'd been a couple of degrees off either way, we wouldn't have picked up a word. As it was, they sort of got bits and pieces. They didn't get everything, but they got enough. And through putting it through various filters and all the rest, they could scrub out the white noise, the background stuff, and zoom in on the conversation. And he just said he was just curious what they were talking about. And when he did hear it, he basically said, well, they're having a laugh at Trump's expense, which makes it newsworthy. So that's, there was original talk about, this was a Sputnik feed and all the rest. And it turns out, it was the sanctioned Buckingham Palace one camera that did it, and it just happened to be right place, right time, picking up Trudeau standing close enough to the door and speaking right towards the directional mic. So that's how the clip came about.
Thank you for clearing that up, because there was an awful lot of fog, and as my introduction to it indicated, I was drawn in by that fog. I admit I didn't follow it up closely because my issue with it is, listen, people at conferences, if you've ever been to a convention or anything like that, gathering, people will gather with their peers and have a laugh, and it's blowing off steam, especially something as high pressure as a NATO meeting, where they were all just waiting for that Trump hand grenade to go off. So there were extra tense, and there was that tense exchange between Macron and Trump. And, NATO is a pretty important thing. So when they got the chance to just relax, they were peers talking amongst themselves about another peer, I'll put in quotation marks, who was completely inconsiderate to the rest of them and blathered on for 40 minutes and made everything late, which I think is completely fair game as far as conversation when, you're in the situation I just described. I think we've all been, anyone who's ever been to a conference, you do that at the end of the day. You talk about, oh boy, did that speaker go on and on. And, you're just trying to blow off steam, trying to relax. You and your peers are standing together, turning what could be something that was dull and tedious into a laugh, into an experience that's maybe a little more pleasant. Also, it's a bonding, humor is a bonding exercise. And Trudeau didn't say anything that was factually inaccurate.
No, or even particularly insulting.
I mean,
it was just like, okay, we were late. It was, it was a photo op, and he spent 40 minutes taking questions. And everyone just sort of laughed at sort of the style of bombast that Trump has. And, and I'm at one point, I like to think maybe I'm over it now, but I'm sure I'm not. I mean, I used to be great with foot and mouth. I'd be at one of these conferences or in a meeting or something and saying something, nothing too cruel, nothing too whatever. And going like, they're right behind me, aren't they? I was at a wedding once where I was the best man, and you get paired up with the bride, the maid of honor sitting at the table, and the speeches are going on at great length, and some guy gets up and he's given this sloppy, drunken speech that's just slurring and going on, And I just, you know, I didn't know the maid of honor particularly. We were just kind of thrown together. And I just said, oh, man, that's embarrassing. There's one of these guys at every wedding, isn't there? And she looks at me, yeah, that's my dad. And I'm like, oh, boy. Well, then. And a lovely speech it is, too.
This Foster Brooks impression
is great.
Yeah, did it get cold in here? Wow, Foster Brooks. Now, there's
a blast.
Yeah, there's a blast. Back in the days when people were... You know, humorous.
We're defended
drunks.
By things.
Well, they were humorous drunks, as opposed to being people alcoholics with an addiction problem.
Yeah, I mean, can't make fun of that anymore.
No, Andy Griffith, the town drunk who just let himself in and out of the jail. You know, it was just drunks were just funny.
Otis.
Otis. That's right. Foster Brooks. For those who don't know, look him up because he used to be at every one of those Dean Martin roasts, and his shtick was that he was always tanked. And you know what? It's actually very difficult to be a comedian and try to pretend to be drunk and funny at the same time, because it's not as easy as it sounds, carrying on that character of being incoherent while you're being very coherent, knowing exactly what you're saying. But of course, this was seized upon, the Trudeau thing. Of course, you've got the right-wing trolls, and I don't even call them conservatives anymore, because not every conservative I would call right-wing, and not every right-winger I would say is a political conservative. There's just people out there who just like trying to embarrass people who politically are their opponents, and they don't do it in a particularly civil or decent or clever way. So of course they were waiting to say, Justin Trudeau, he's a disgrace to Canada. Look what he did, insulting Trump. It's like, okay, are you serious? You are criticizing Justin Trudeau for accurately commenting on the fact that Trump held everybody up and not focusing or realizing that the person they're talking about regularly resorts to using Twitter, the coward's armor,
to insult
people and demean them and say horrible, horrible things about them. You compare what Trudeau said to what Trump has said about people and individuals, two people who aren't even political people, people who crossed his path for whatever reason. Horrible character assassinating things that he repeats over and over and over and refuses to ever apologize or step back from. There's no comparison. It's like you can't. So he said something about Trump that Trump found unflattering. Too damn bad. You live by the sword, you die by the sword. But in this case,
it's important to stand up to bullies too. I mean, they always tell you that everywhere you go, and it's just like you don't suck up to them. You don't you don't let them get away with stuff. You call them on it. Now, this wasn't to his face, but this was not meant to be a public statement. And
there's those who criticize and say if he felt that way, he should have said it to Trump's face. And it's how stupid are you? First of all, that's not how diplomacy works when you're at a diplomatic event. Secondly, Trudeau would just be criticized for inflaming the situation, waving a red blanket in front of a charging bull. We have a precarious NAFTA or whatever they're calling it now, negotiations that were trying to, finalize the damn document. It would serve nobody's purpose for Trudeau to go up to Trump and say, you made us all late, like to stand up to him as the bully he is, because it wouldn't change
him down.
It wouldn't change his behavior. Wouldn't. And you know what? Trump, 40 seconds after he said that Justin was two-faced or whatever, he was on to other things. The man's facing impeachment. His businesses are collapsing. The walls are falling in around him. Justin Trudeau's comments, he doesn't give a damn, and he knows that he's said worse. As far as he's concerned, that's just part of the give and take of, in his case, business, and he continues to carry on as a politician as if he's a New York real estate shyster. But of course, another good excuse for people to jump on Justin Trudeau. And, there is something, I don't know if you feel this way. Let me ask you, do you feel there's something to the criticism of it was indiscreet to say those things out in a public place? Do you think that it was indiscreet?
you know, he's among colleagues. He's among peers, like you said earlier. You know, it's unfortunate it got picked up. I mean, there's all kinds of hot mic things that happen. You know, the some of them are famous. You know, there's Ronald Reagan who was, you know, goofing around before a speech saying, you know, I've signed legislation outlawing Russia and the bombing begins in 5 minutes.
That's right.
Hot mic.
Yeah, before his one of his weekly radio addresses.
Yeah, he was screwing around. Yeah, and you know, there's you know all kinds of things. There's you know Trump has had his own. I mean, Trump had that that trailer.
Discussion. The Access Hollywood.
Yeah, the Access Hollywood. Yeah. The grab him by the pussy one. I mean, it's like there. Well, that's the
thing
that's,
about Trump is that
that's pretty bad.
Thing about Trump is secret. You know, mic that's on him and that he doesn't know is a hot mic or not. The man would say the same thing if he knew the mic was on and he was being recorded. So I guess there's some credit to the guy that, you know, he is authentic.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah.
But the criticism of Trudeau, I felt, you know, okay, well, maybe it was a little indiscreet to be in a room with that many people because it wasn't just his peers. They weren't just all off in a corner somewhere or in a small room. It was just them. There was a lot of people there. Yeah,
there's no press there, though. I mean, it was supposed to be sort of a closed session.
A closed session with a pool feed.
No. Yeah, with a pool feed.
So it's not really closed. And
no, and you know the rule in showbiz, every mic's a hot mic, that it's that you're always being recorded, and so you know that's why you don't do all you don't say things, don't do things. There's always a photographer who's going to catch you with a mouthful of food or your finger in your nose or something. And so you know if you're in the public eye, you know, it's understood that there's certain ways that you have to behave. And, you know, I suppose, you know, the people in the room, including Justin Trudeau, let their guard down for a minute and assumed that, you know, out of sight, out of mind, that there's no cameras in here. So we can just have a little conversation and, you know, and nobody's going to be able to pick up the sound. I mean, technology now, you know, you hear all kinds of horror stories about the way they're able to pick up sound in rooms. If you're doing a surreptitious recording of people, that they can fire a laser at a piece of glass and
yes, pick up the vibrations. Yes.
Or even, you know, a piece of gum foil, gum wrapper foil on the ground can act as a sounding board to pick up the vibrations. And so we live in a world where there isn't a lot of privacy. And if you're under the microscope all the time, as you are as world leader, it's going to happen. You know, at the end of the day, it isn't, you know, what he said was not, like you said, not terrible. It wasn't insulting. He didn't call him names. He just said, oh, wow, you know, you guys, you having as much fun as I'm having with Trump kind of thing. And everyone laughed. And I think that's good for international relations because, you know, there's nothing like a little shared pain to bring people together.
Well, listen, Trump has made himself the pariah in that group. He's made it clear that it was his decision to be not a friendly member of that alliance. You know, he's not good with his allies, with the United States allies. He's better with the U.S.'s enemies. So it's not like he's their buddy and they're stabbing him in the back. Trump set the tone and the mood and the relationship well before this event occurred. I think that maybe Trudeau could have been a little bit more discreet about what's said in a room that big, where people are milling about and somebody could pick up a piece of conversation and hear it. Like, I understand that criticism, but so what? He didn't, like you said, he didn't say anything that was inaccurate. He didn't say anything that was insulting, or not terribly insulting. He correctly described the situation. And if Trump supporters were upset, it's like, well, you should be upset with Trump for giving that opportunity. For yeah, being
you
40
get mad
minutes
at people
late,
for telling the truth.
Yeah, well, they do.
Although that's diplomacy, you know, you politely pretend that people aren't saying things. And I think it's important. You know, a lot of people didn't see Trump's reaction. You know, he called Justin Trudeau famously, you know, two-faced. You know, like, oh, well, like the, you know, as if Justin Trudeau is this great friend of his in private, and then you know he's caught talking behind his back. Afterwards, the Independent in the UK reported that Trump had said afterwards, when he was talking about calling Justin Trudeau two-faced, you know, Trump's exact words were, well, wasn't that pretty funny when I called Trump, when I called Trudeau two-faced? So, you know, he knows that he's playing the game too.
The thing is, in the past, this would have passed. This would not still be news. This would not still be circulating on social media. But on social media, nothing dies amongst, there's people who just in their DNA hate the fact that Justin Trudeau exists. And so they will, and the problem is there are some legitimate things that you can criticize Justin Trudeau for. However, they get lost in amongst all the things that he's criticized for that are just offside.
You mean his socks aren't a pressing issue?
Well, his socks aren't a pressing issue. The fact that the man did blackface when he was in high school and was a jerk when he was in high school and was overdid the cosplay when he was Aladdin. These are not actual issues facing the country. You know, we shouldn't be focusing on that. There are policy issues that the Liberal government puts forward.
Sure, there's the economy. There's climate change.
Exactly. There's real issues to focus on. And Trudeau is not by any means a perfect leader. I've stated that I think that he's far too loyal to the wrong people. Amongst his aides and advisors, amongst other things, there are things that we should be focusing on looking at Justin Trudeau. But you know, when people are still calling him Justin Blackface on social media and going on and on about something that the guy did when he was a teenager or when he was 29 and dressed up as Aladdin, you don't feel, you know, if you're not of that particular political persuasion, you don't feel like bringing up or contributing to actual criticism that you may have of Justin Trudeau, because you don't want to pile it onto the stuff that's just ridiculous and has a shelf life that far exceeds what anything should possibly be. It's like Jay Leno years ago, when he used to tell jokes, said, you know, that in 50,000 years, some archaeologists will be digging through the remains of North America and pick up a chicken McNugget and say, hey, it's a chicken McNugget, and it tastes just the same. And that's just the way that it is with this blackface stuff, this brownface stuff. They go back to talking about this alleged groping, which didn't happen. They start intimating that he committed sexual assault against an underage girl, which was disproven. And it was another Kinsella attempt to try to smear Trudeau during the election that no newspaper would touch because it was completely disproven. But they, you know, when all of this is going on, this character assassination, this fiction or this elaboration on an exaggeration of things from Trudeau's way past, you're not likely to be willing to contribute to criticizing him for stuff he's actually doing now. Because it's like, well, okay, that stuff's unfair. I'm not going to pile on. And so a lot of liberals stay quiet when, in fact, there are things to criticize Justin Trudeau about. I just wish that, and that's why I say that these people who are on the right, these trolls online, they're not actually conservatives. They're not political conservatives. Because political conservatives would have political comments to make. They would make comments about policy. And what we're getting is not comments about policy. We're getting comments that are just trying to make Justin Trudeau look stupid or like a hypocrite or a racist. So, you know,
I mean, it's personality assassination, like you said. We've talked about this before. You know, we talked about it when the blackface, brownface, genie face thing came up. And, you know, I think one of the things that both the Conservatives and the NDP found and learned the hard way was that attacking solely on the basis of personality, trying to damage the Trudeau brand, and, you know, further damage it, and just using that as the wedge, didn't work. I mean, it certainly eroded the popularity of Justin Trudeau. I mean, the last election was a near thing, but, you know, they don't seem to have, like you say, any other real policy things. I mean, one of the first people out of the gate when the comments at NATO made by Justin Trudeau, first broke was, of course, Conservative Party of Canada meme. You know, Trudeau is a fraud is, you know, one of the things that they came up and, you know, and sign up here, you know, share if you agree and sign up here if, you know, to show your support for Trudeau being a fraud. And so, you know, again, trying to damage the brand, very personal.
Also,
very whatever.
A fraud in what? That he is diplomatic when talking to Trump, but that after the fact, when he's talking to peers, he talks, you know, he lets off steam by saying what they're all thinking. How is that really a fraud? Diplomacy is putting, being a diplomatic in a diplomatic setting. And then afterwards, if you're joking with your friends, you're joking with your friends. There's nothing fraudulent about that. Because if he's a fraud for doing that, I think most of us are frauds.
Of course we are. I mean, you know, we all have, you know, we all have social faces, social veneers, and there's people that we are forced in life to, God knows, to be nice to who, if it were up to us, we wouldn't be nice to. And so it's a perfectly natural reaction to, you know, being put in a social situation where, you know, and God knows people are forced to be nice to Trump when they don't feel like it because he holds power and he can ruin your economy and all kinds of other things. So all these people are forced to do it. And so this is a perfectly natural reaction to the uncomfortableness of having to be nice to a joker like Trump on the world stage. And you know, I was disappointed too. You know, so the Conservatives came out with their meme that Trudeau's a fraud, sign up if you agree so we can data mine you and send you all kinds of other outrage stuff.
Yeah.
But the about, you know, a couple hours later, Jagmeet Singh came out with exactly the same thing. Trudeau's a national embarrassment and the fraud. I don't think he's the word.
Which fraud. I don't understand. I mean, there was a brief shining moment during the last election when I thought Jagmeet Singh had two brain cells to rub together. But that has since faded. He is...
Well, they decided to go negative and instead and, of...
Well, like, hey, Jagmeet, do you really... do you want to push for another election? Your party is broke. You weren't even... Two-thirds of your ridings didn't even have candidates when the last election happened, and you certainly knew when the date was that the writ was going to be dropped.
It's not a surprise. It's on the calendar.
Yeah. So do you really want to be echoing Trump and echoing Andrew Scheer? Do you really want to be pushing for anything that feels like you're pushing for an election when you are an ineffective leader who couldn't get his party in gear until he came across as a nice, funny guy in the English language debate? Because before that, they were talking about the NDP being wiped off the map until people said, hey, I kind of like this Jagmeet guy. He's kind of a funny guy.
Yeah,
you know,
like
Joe Pesci. You know, I don't understand. There's just no thinking going on with the NDP.
And I can't understand why they're doing it because I don't see it working. I mean, maybe I'm not the target audience. Clearly, I'm not the target audience, so it doesn't really particularly work on me. You know, and I enjoy, like you, I enjoy good snark. I enjoy clever, you know, even, you know, clever insults. But like you said at the beginning, it's got to be clever. I can't just be sort of the nah, you stink kind of stuff. If someone has a point to make that is clever. I don't, you know, if it comes from the Conservative side, which is pretty rare because they're not known for their sense of humor particularly, because that requires a certain amount of self-reflection and self-deprecation, and they don't really have those bones in their bodies. And you know, the NDP tends to be a little on the sanctimonious side.
A little serious about themselves.
A little serious about themselves.
Yeah.
At least, you know, as a group, I know lots of funny friends who are NDP supporters, but you know, they tend to take the
struggle as individuals pretty seriously.
Yeah,
as individuals, they're different than when they get in the group and they're all raising their fists and the revolution and brotherhood and all the other crap and the sandals and so on. But Jagmeet Singh has proven to me that he is a dummy. He is hollow, that there's nothing happening, that the brightest thing that occurs above his neck is his turban. There's no bright thoughts being contained by it. He is, I don't know how this, I know how he got elected leader It was ethnic politics, and listen, lots of ethnicities do this. You know, you go around and you go to the synagogues, the mosques, the ashrams, the wherever.
Denomination meetings where the buses roll up from the, the Chinese old age homes or the Sikh groups or the or the whatever. And
And you get the people from your own ethnic group, and they come to support you because you're a member of their ethnic group. They may not necessarily vote for you, but like in a general election, but they'll vote for you for leadership position. And that's how he got elected, not because he was any kind of brilliant parliamentarian, because in fact, he wasn't even in parliament at the time. But he's really, the NDP has really, they had a golden opportunity after the election to be seen as a partner in a progressive government movement in this country. And he's blown every opportunity for that, just by trying to take shots at Justin Trudeau. Well, and I don't know how it benefits him.
Yeah, and I don't understand it either, because like you say, I think there's a real opportunity here for a, maybe I'm wrong. I'm not an Ottawa insider or a Liberal Party insider, so I don't know. Maybe Jagmeet has held out the hand of friendship. I'm sure they'd love to portray it that way to the Liberals, and the Liberals have said, ah, screw you, we're going to do this by ourselves with our friends from the Bloc. I don't think that's the way it would have worked, but I would have thought, if Jagmeet had said, we're going to do the best we can to get as much of our progressive agenda passed for as long as this government is able to, continue to do these things. We're not going to issue ultimatums. I mean, they started off, election night with ultimatums. We're not going to support this government unless it does this. Earlier today, they were saying that they might not vote in favor of the throne speech. They might vote with the Conservatives, but he's lamenting the fact that the Bloc is supporting the Liberals and they can't bring down the government. I'm like, are you listening to yourself? Why is the Bloc in there like a dirty shirt? And you're not in there pushing for pharmacare, dental care, various other things that are important, a green agenda. I mean, you can, and being loud about it, standing up and saying, we will support this government as long as they're on the right track. And we're not going to get everything that we want, because this is politics and we're all adults, but we will get a lot of it done. And when we can't get anything more done and we can't do anymore, then we will look at our options. But in the meantime, we're going to make the best of this. We're not going to be in the driver's seat. I mean, they like to think they're in the driver's seat. I mean, Elizabeth May was talking about being in the driver's seat with her a couple of members. Politics doesn't work that way unless you're in the the Israeli Knesset or one of the other ones where
three members can actually
control the entire government.
Yeah, and for all of you fans of proportional representation, take a look at Israel, who currently doesn't have a government and hasn't had one for weeks, and they don't know if anyone's going to be able to form one. Because
Netanyahu's under indictment, and
but the reason that Israeli policy has been the way that it's been for the past number of years is because of proportional representation and small groups, small political parties with three or four members coming to hold the balance of power and making demands in order to support a government that are completely out of step with the way Israeli citizens think. And that's why you get some things coming out of the Israeli government that I just shake my head and say, what the hell are they thinking? It's not even strategically smart, but they have to keep all of these people happy, and that's proportional representation. But it's interesting because we're talking about diplomacy versus non-diplomacy. And diplomacy is the act of getting what you want through charm, moral suasion, but mostly through charm. Jagmeet Singh doesn't seem to understand that you attract more flies with honey than vinegar. And if he's serious about trying to get a progressive agenda through, I mean, if you look at you look past in Ontario, coalition government between the Liberals and the NDP when they toppled the 42 years or whatever of Tory rule when Frank Miller was the Tory leader. Bob Rae knew how to operate with the liberals, so that it wound up being, you know, when the next election came, the NDP got a lot of credit for things that had gotten done that benefited people, and they formed the government.
Well, they still take credit federally, you know, for health care and for all kinds of other things that we have. I mean, they're very proud. I mean, you know, you can't talk to them about saying, you know, all these great progressive things the liberals passed, that was because of us. It's like, well, great. Why don't you do that again?
Yeah. Singh is just not leading the NDP down a path where, listen, they do have some power, but he's squandering it by saying that he's going to vote with the conservatives. He's squandering it. There's a natural affinity between, I mean, the liberals are centrists and the center left, the NDP is left. There's a natural affinity there for social programs and things of that nature, for a compassionate form of government. There's natural teamwork that could take place. And yet Singh has, at every opportunity, spit in Trudeau's face metaphorically, and it's like, well, you have to work with this guy. How are you serving the interests of NDP members and the goals of the NDP by pissing off the person who can help you get some of that agenda through? Like, the NDP and the conservatives have very, very poor leadership at this point in time. And you know, you've got Andrew Scheer hanging on by his fingernails, throwing people under the bus, blaming them for
poor communications.
The fact is that the more and more people got to know Andrew Scheer, the polls showed the more they disliked him.
Yeah, the less they liked him.
But you know, Trudeau showed that you have to, when dealing with Trump, you have to be diplomatic, even if you think the guy's a boob. And sometimes the only way you can stand, live with yourself dealing with a boob by being friendly to them, is afterwards saying, oh, what an ass. But to his face, you have to be diplomatic. That's the role of leaders internationally, dealing with other international leaders. And so there's some movement on the NAFTA file, and you know, things are, the tariffs got dropped. That's positive diplomacy.
And Trump needs NAFTA as a win, too. I mean, I don't see this as being Trump is famous for doing things that are contrary to America's interests.
Yes.
But he really needs NAFTA to pass, because, of course, it hasn't passed in the United States yet. And that, everyone, when you watch CNN and all the American news sources, they say, you know, Trump really needs NAFTA as a win, because he's had so few wins internationally. You know, he's had trade wars with everybody. And there's supposed to be, there's new tariffs going on China tonight, I think, which is, you know, going to be billions and billions of dollars out of the pockets of Americans. But, you know, Trump has convinced them that China's going to pay for it somehow. He needs NAFTA's win. So, you know, the people who say, whoa, you know, our NAFTA's in the balance here, and, you know, making fun of Trump behind his back is going to spoil our chances of getting NAFTA passed, is like, no, he needs it as much, if not more, than we do at this point. So I don't think that is. I mean, there's a million other ways that Trump can find to make our lives difficult, and no doubt will, because he's that kind of a person.
But don't you think by now he's completely, like, he's got more pressing issues than what Justin Trudeau said about him.
Oh, I think a couple of them, yeah, like going to jail.
Yeah, so I think by now that's so far in his rear view mirror that it isn't going to hold up NAFTA. And there's a lot of Republican governors who want NAFTA to go through, because they're, you know, of border states, or they trade so much with Canada.
Yeah, their economies trade mostly with Mexico or China or whatever. And you know, they're gonna be facing long unemployment lines, more social welfare, all, you know, such as it exists.
Yeah.
It's,
the idea that Trudeau making fun, if you will, reflecting accurately Trump's behavior and the impact it had on everybody else, the thought that that's going to lead to a trade war with the United States, or that it's going to derail the new NAFTA somehow, is it's complete propaganda. And it's not even, if you use your critical thinking, likely to happen. Trump has way more pressing issues to deal with. He needs the NAFTA win. He needs the support of the Republican governors who rely on trade, their states rely on trade with Canada. And also, Trump kind of sees the back and forth, the insults back and forth, as just part of the game. It's no different than wrestling, you know, wrestling managers who are calling each other out before the matches. It's just it's just part of the dance. Well, so the idea that this is going to harm us in any way, it's absurd.
You know, and he's already moved on. I mean, when he said, in his comments after, he said, that was funny when I said that guy was two-faced. I mean, he's clearly,
Well, he also said Justin's a good guy, but he was probably upset that I called him out on his NATO spending.
Yeah, so he's got to turn it into a win for himself that he's, he's the big man and he got him at a disadvantage. So, Justin has to say something. So, I think you're right. I think it has just passed. I think one of the things about seeing the world leaders together, having a laugh, whether it's at Trump's expense or otherwise, I think a lot of people are really missing those years where countries tried to get along, where people try to get along. And if you want to extrapolate that to Canadian politics, I mean, what we're saying about the NDP and the Liberals, I mean, I think it would be a tremendous boost for the NDP if they found places where they could work with the Liberals. And, they don't have to get in bed with them. They don't have to love them. They don't have to buy them a ring. They just have to say, you know what? Canadian politics has been so full of squabbling the last little while. It's been nothing but nasty. It's been nothing but character assassination. We're not going to do that anymore. We're going to focus on what's important for Canadians. We're going to support the government where we can. And we're going to try to work together. And all of a sudden, I think people are going like, oh, maybe this is a new way of doing politics, or maybe we're going back to the old way of doing politics where people actually try to get together, find common ground, and do something. I mean, there used to be bipartisan support for all kinds of things, both here and in the United States. You don't see any bipartisan support anymore.
Because it makes you a traitor.
Yeah, exactly.
And people are actually called traitors if they talk to fraternize with the other party, let alone vote with them. But the problem is, I mean, the jobs report that came out today here in Canada, it's the worst in a decade. There are reasons for it. We should be debating them. That should be the thing that is dominating public discourse. The environment should be dominating public discourse. Things like pharmacare should be dominating public discourse. Oil pipelines, things, dealing with our indigenous people fairly. That should dominate. But what are we getting? We're still having young people on social media focusing on something Justin Trudeau did when he was in high school and when he was 29 years old. And that's hurting us as a country, because there are important issues that we're being distracted from. And we should be upset about a lot of these issues. These are really, really important to not just our way of life today and tomorrow, but next week and down the road. And we're like a bunch of kids. I mean, the social media and the mainstream media as well, they're struggling for survival. So they're adapting to and adopting some of the gotcha clickbait tactics of the gossip sites on the web. We're not dealing with issues which really need to be dealt with. Just like the fact that for years we've ignored the fact that where the baby boomer generation is getting older, like all of us are, but the size of the baby boom generation and the amount of services that are going to be required for them in healthcare and other things, we have not been preparing for that. We've not been preparing our economy or our infrastructure for what is obviously going to be a major, an unprecedented historical demand on numerous social systems in the social services in this country by aging boomers who are, people are living longer lives, and they're doing it through, advanced healthcare methods, which are expensive. But we ignored that for years, and that's coming home to roost, and it hasn't fully come home to roost. But these issues, there are issues to talk about. There are issues to criticize Justin Trudeau about, or to question him on, or to hold, his feet to the fire and say, give me an answer for this. There are important issues that really matter. Whether he sang a Calypso song in blackface when he was in high school doesn't matter anymore. It really doesn't. It happened so long ago, and he apologized for it, and he's changed his ways. I mean, people of color long ago moved on from that, but it's white right wingers who use it as a weapon, which is just its own form of racism, using racism as a weapon just to try to bring somebody else down, or charges of racism, is racism in and of itself, as far as I'm concerned. You're just turning people of color into pawns, into bullets, you know, for your guns. That's horrible. But people are talking about nonsense when we need to be talking about things that have some substance. And during the election, the complaint was people weren't talking about substance. And now here we are after the election. People are still talking about the same nonsense they were talking about during the election, and we're not talking about substance.
Yeah. You know, and, you know, the throne speech was, you know, was received the other week with a lot of yawns. There is a, you know, the biggest complaint from the NDP was, again, that it had a number of things that were sort of on their agenda, like dental care and getting rid of the boil water advisories for
indigenous
bands that were suffering under them and have been for, I think it's like down to 63 or something, but to get rid of all of them. The complaint was, well, there's no details. It's like, you know, throne speech isn't really made for that. It's, you know, sometimes it says we're going to throw some money at it, and that's basically it, or we're going to set up a commission or whatever. But, you know, it's a, but it's going the right way. It's got a lot of the right stuff in it. And, you know, it's up to the government to whatever support that they can muster from anyone else to flesh that out and make sure that it moves forward. So it isn't just a platitude in a throne speech. But they say, people just kind of went, eh, throne speech, whatever. It's business as usual.
I'm pretty sure that the response to the throne speech was written by the NDP and the Conservatives the night before.
Well, I think most of them are.
You know, like it was just so pro forma as far as, we are very disappointed I didn't address.
They didn't mention Alberta once. They didn't mention Saskatchewan once.
You know, like, it's just,
they didn't mention pipelines once. It's like,
yeah. You know, what? To be fair, they didn't mention me either.
I always think it's like a rock star who comes to, Podunk, Indiana, and goes, hey, I'm glad to be here in Podunk, Indiana. And the crowd goes nuts. It's like, you know, you don't have to call out everybody just to get a cheap cheer.
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing that's disturbing me is the fact that these were pro forma responses from the Conservatives and the NDP. And, you know, governments that put forward legislation, that legislation isn't always perfect. Okay, there's sometimes...
Usually not, yeah.
Yeah, there's room for improvement. And that improvement comes from people in other parties who have different perspectives, so they're able to see where the weaknesses are in ways that the government can't because of their own political blinders or whatever. And we don't have responsible opposition right now where they'll look at legislation and say, for the good of Canadians, we're looking at this legislation. Some things are good. Here's where it could be improved. You know, because that's the role of the loyal opposition is to strengthen legislation that the government makes or strike it down if it's bad. But now, how's that going to happen? How is a Conservative Party, an opposition led by Andrew Scheer, who does nothing but slam Trudeau personally and has made it clear, the cabal that's running the Conservative Party now has made it clear that any support of anything that Justin Trudeau puts forward is considered heresy. How are we going to have responsible, you know, opposition looking at and pointing out legitimate weaknesses?
Yeah, working in committees and trying to improve, and that presupposes that there's a willingness on the part of the Liberals to listen to comment. And I suppose if the comments aren't on the end of a dagger and not just trying to do the political gotcha one-upmanship and embarrassing the other side with their outrage, that you'd like to think that there is some ability to work in committees. But going back to the Harper years, I mean, Harper, I remember famously in one of his first minorities, published a secret handbook for all the committee members, all the Conservative committee members, about how basically to obstruct committees, how to make sure that the other parties get frozen out, and how to shut things down and basically dominate and make sure they push through whatever they wanted. So there's been this this attitude for, you know, a decade and a half where there isn't any cooperation. Again, there isn't any bipartisan support or tripartisan support for things. If it's a good idea, you know, there's room for legitimate differences of opinion, but there just isn't, there hasn't been a willingness for quite some time to be able to say, you know what, that's not a bad idea. Maybe I can make some suggestions to make it better, or maybe it isn't perfect, but I think, you know, it's certainly a step in the right direction and we can move that way. There just hasn't been.
Yeah, the job of the official opposition is not to shit on the government and obstruct automatically everything the government puts forward as legislation. Their job is to point out the weaknesses in legislation, make legislation stronger, or stop legislation that should be stopped, but not just because it's coming from another political party, from the government. It has, there have to be solid political reasons. And this is why I say that we're right now suffering a shortage of political conservatives. And what we're getting instead is a lot of right-wingers who belong to the conservative party, but are not political conservatives. They don't have the country's best interests in mind. They just want to own the libtards. And, and there's people on the left that are just as damn bad. And, you know, every time you say something like that, people say, oh, just like Trump, good, fine people on both sides. No, what I'm saying is that there's not fine people on both sides.
It's an important difference. Yes, there are jerks on both sides.
That there's people on the left that are completely unreasonable in what they want, unwilling to compromise, irrational in what their expectations are. So you've got this polarization. And I think the majority of Canadians sit in the comfortable middle. But, you know, and that's one of the reasons we've got FU politics, is because where's the voice for the majority of Canadians who are like, can you guys just get together and put together a policy that will help the most number of people, please, and hurt the least number of people? Can you just get together for the sake of the country that you've been elected to govern in whatever role you currently inhabit? And make legislation that is sensible and good for this country, as opposed to just trying to be the Jets and the Sharks. And I don't see this changing. Yeah. I mean, maybe you're more hopeful than me, but I was hopeful after the election that Scheer would resign and there would be some activity from the conservatives that, hey, we got our asses kicked twice. Maybe we should change and become a little more reasonable again, like the conservatives were in the past. But that's not happening. He won't let go.
If anything, there, you know, I've seen there's always chatter. You know, it's been happening since sort of the neo rightists have been in charge of the conservative parties, whether it's the Tea Party in the States or the reformists in Canada. I mean, whenever they lose an election, they always get together and they have a think tank and they always go, you know, the reason we lost, we weren't far right enough. We weren't true to our incredibly crazy, wacky right-wing base. And that's why people didn't respect us, because we were trying to be something we're not. We were trying to be kind and caring and centrists. So, you know, screw that. We're going to go way, way back out to the right.
Which, if you look at, I mean, any polling, if they were to look at any actual polling data, that's not, you know, their theory is not borne out by the data.
No, it isn't at all. I mean, like you say, you just look at the numbers and, you know, they're going to have a hardcore kernel of their people of you know, the really wacky right is always 10 to 13, 14%. And then you've got sort of the, you know, the grumpy right, what Heather Malik calls angry pajamas. They'll make up another 10%. So now you got about 25%, and it's that next bit that gets you to 40%, that next 15% that they have to win over. And either they do it by negative ads or by trickery or by, you know, all kinds of hot button sorts of things that they really never intend to follow through on. And they try to cobble together 40% that way, but they're starting with sort of the crazies on the side and they have trouble with that last 15%, which is, you know, getting into the sensible middle.
Who aren't interested. You know, the idea that the conservatives have lost the last two elections here in Canada because they weren't conservative enough is the equivalent of, firefighters saying, you know, the reason we couldn't put out that fire in that building, we didn't pour enough gasoline on it.
Not enough fire.
Yeah. Like it's absurd. I'm hoping that in April the Conservative Party takes stock and elects a leader, you know, gets rid of Scheer, because even conservatives, you know, dyed-in-the-wool conservative friends of mine told me off the record that they hated Scheer. They didn't think he was a good leader, but they hated Trudeau more, and they always voted conservative, so they're going to vote conservative. But they there's no enthusiasm for Scheer. I hope they get rid of him. We get a good conservative leader in there who can restore some civility to that party, because Canada needs a properly functioning a political conservative party. And I hope the NDP at some point ditch this ditz that they've got as a leader. And because, you know, I mean, the years that Ed Broadbent was the leader of the NDP, he was seen as the most honest and trusted politician in the country. Now, it's always easy for the NDP to come across that way, because there was never an expectation that they would form government. So they can promise everybody
it was like
a pony.
It was like Ontario, you know, the NDP was great in Ontario until the Ray government came in, and, you know, they were handed a tough economic situation, and they had a whole bunch of neophytes, and they fumbled and made a mess of things in a lot of ways. You know, it's always better not to have a record to run on. And if you're the NDP, where you don't really, you know, you've never really, federally, you've never held the reins of power, it's really great to say, you know, boy, but if we were in there, we would be so great, you wouldn't believe it. It's like, well, that's great. Maybe we'll never know.
Well, that's the thing that Scheer did all the way through Trudeau's first term. Every time Trudeau had a success of some kind, Scheer would just tweet, "We could have done it better." You know,
that's like NAFTA. We got to get a better deal with NAFTA.
We could have got. And meanwhile, he was wetting the bed when Trump was using his bully tactics and saying, tweeting that just take whatever deal they'll offer us.
That's right.
We need them so much. Like, he was sitting there with sucking his thumb, wetting the bed. And then afterwards, he's like, "We would have got a better deal." No, you wouldn't.
Well, they were actually sending people to Washington, as conservative MPs to sort of get in the middle of our negotiations, quite unbidden. You're not the government. Stay out of the way.
It's just I hope that this is just a small period in our history of as a country and the history of the world, where people can't have principled differences of opinion and understand that the other person's opinion isn't yours, but it's coming from the same place, a desire to have positive outcomes for the most number of people and hurt the least number of people. I'd like to see a return to sensibility, please.
Yeah, and I'd think like to Canadians see a little humor with it too. It would be nice if people sort of got their, got a little bit of a sense of humor back about some of these things, and being able to laugh at things and laugh things off too, because, you know, the other side of the outrage machine is that that nobody can be human, no one can say something that's
and nothing's funny. Because don't you know how serious the situation is?
Nothing's been funny for 15 years.
Yeah. All right. I think that's a good way.
We'll talk about that another time.
Yes. Stephen Lawton's. People can find you at Stephen Lawton's on Twitter. And
exactly.
That's Stephen. You're the PH version.
I'm the PH.
That's
I'm
right.
The, I'm the proper way of spelling it.
Well, we can discuss that someday. Stephen with a PH, LAUTENS, at Stephen Lawton's. I'm at Stephen J. Kersner. And as I say at the end of every one of these renewed podcasts we've done, Stephen, I really should start using my Twitter more often.
Yes, you say that every time.
Yeah, and then I go look at it, and it's got like over like 100 things I have to respond to, and I say, okay, I'll do that later. And then and then we record again, and it's
well, you're,
it's
you're a busy
rinse, repeat.
Guy.
Yeah. But
you're not missing a whole lot.
That I think is probably true. Thank you, Stephen, and thank you, audience, for listening to us. Just two guys talking, sharing their opinions. Hopefully, I mean, I think Stephen really dispelled some of the notions that even I had about what that Trudeau feed, you know, that footage, where it came from, how it came to be. That was very valuable, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, I'll put up the link to the actual interview on CNN with the CBC.
And it sounds
producer.
As somebody who's been in television since forever, that explanation sounds remarkably credible. But if you guys like this kind of conversation. If you like this show or other shows on FU Politics and you support FU Politics or the FU Network, where we're going to be expanding into music and geek culture and mental health and health and all these things with the same kind of approach, which is the talking the way normal people talk and cutting out all of the elites, as they call it, the pundits, the jargoniers, all of the people, the political proxies, the talking point people, cutting that out, just trying to have authentic connection between the people making the shows and the people listening. If you support that, do us a favor. The right has a lot of money invested in dividing us. We're trying to bring us together. And we're trying to get that middle we were talking about that I think is the majority a voice. So we can't do that because, you know what? For a voice, money talks. And we'd like you to help us out with a subscription to Patreon. Starts at $1 a month. It keeps building, but it's building slowly. We need your help. Patreon.com/FU Network TV. And Patreon is spelled P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Not people confused.
Yep, that's
patron.
Right. Patreon.
You know, yeah, yes. You're a patron, but you go to patreon.com/FU Network TV. $1, $5 a month. It's all starting to add up. So please help us out with that. And if you're not comfortable doing a monthly subscription, I get it. But you want to help out, you can go to PayPal and just give us a one-time boost through our email address, funetworktv@gmail.com. That's at PayPal, funetworktv@gmail.com. And if you don't have any funds, but you want to contribute, I'm sure that you have skills that can help behind the scenes. There's a lot of people helping behind the scenes right now. Who they said that's their contribution to the cause here. And we couldn't do this without them. People like Kyle Gunderson, who has been working really hard on our website and all the other things, trying to keep our digital stuff together. Danny Mendlow, who took ill, but I would say that we wouldn't be here without him either. There's other people who've contacted me and said, I don't have money, but how can I help? And they're helping, and they'll get mentions as well as we go on. But there's other ways to help. If you don't have the money, and not everybody does, but you want to help, contact, just the best email is hey@funetwork.tv. And tell us what you're good at. Or if you're interested in getting trained to be good at stuff, we're providing training at the FU Network now since the cable access days are over, the place where people used to go to get free training in how to, be in production, be a director, do cameras, audio, lighting, how to, be a host, perform. All of that is gone. All that free training is gone now, or most of it anyways, since cable access stations were mostly shut down about a year ago. We're filling in that gap. We're willing to provide that training to teach you guys how we make podcasts and how to go about it. We need help with production. We need help with post-production. We need help with research. We need help with booking guests. We need help with thinking up topics. We need help with public relations, with PR, publicity, all of that. If you've got talent at that or you have an interest in learning how to get good at that, that's, hey@funetwork.tv. All right, Stephen, I think
yeah, and if you're not good at anything, you can always be on our podcast.
How do you think we got here? All right. Thank you, Stephen. And
we'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, and Mrs. Lawton's, I didn't swear, I don't think, this time.
No, didn't.
Yeah, so
I can send to my mom.
Yeah, I'm trying to mind my P's and Q's
for
Mrs. Lawton's. Okay.
Civility.
Thanks. Thank you, all of you. And we'll be back again, hopefully next week, with another Stephen and Stephen podcast here on FU Politics on FUN, the FU Network.
This is FUN, the FU Network.